This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuke and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website is illegalcurve.com. And remember, coming up in hour number three, we don't do it often. We'll be taking your calls, so get ready to get in touch with us in studio coming up in hour number three.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From In Goal Magazine, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Kevin Woodley. Kevin joins us to talk about goaltending in and around the NHL. Kevin, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, I might be a little groggy this morning, boys. I'm playing in the Canucks Autism Tournament this weekend, and we had our draft party last night, so forgive me. I'm recovering in advance of playing twice today, so as bad as I sound now, it's better than if you got me tomorrow, that's for sure.
You'll be able to sweat out some of the toxins in the course of this interview, and I guess before you hit the ice. It's a good cause, so maybe give it a quick plug. You know, obviously, it's a good tournament for a worthwhile cause, so what's it all about?
Yeah, no, it's basically just, this is the second year. They bring in a bunch of alumni and then teams, beer league teams in my case, sometimes corporate teams, just raise as much money as they can. The winners of the tournament aren't the guys that win the most games. It's the teams that raise the most money. We raised over $41,000 ourselves as a team. A lot of grassroots raffles, going into beer league locker rooms and selling raffle tickets. And so I'm really proud of my teammates because as we've gotten to know the people involved in the Canucks Autism Network and seen the impact of the work, it's something that it's really easy to get behind. And the event itself, you know, you do the work for the right reasons and for the good cause, but the event itself is also phenomenal. You know, strong alumni support, both the twins, Daniel and Henrik Sedin, playing in this thing. Got to face Daniel last year in this. Todd Bertuzzi came into town, and so it's really fascinating to see him sort of reconnect and be celebrated by this fan base. A lot of big names, just a great cause. It's all for the right reasons, and it's also a hell of a weekend, so I'm looking forward to it.
Kevin, that sounds like a great cause, and congratulations for participating in that great event. Obviously, we wanted to bring you on to talk about goaltending throughout the NHL, and you know the legacy and the legend of Jordan Binnington just continues to grow. We know what he did last year, winning the Stanley Cup, last night stopping 10 shooters in a row in that breakaway relay contest. You know, tell me why Jordan Binnington isn't the best Canadian goaltender in the NHL right now.
Oh, that's a good one. I never thought of it in terms of where he ranks, but you know, I can tell you that yeah, I guess he is, because I'm looking. I pulled up some data from Clearsight Analytics in advance of our conversation today, and of course we've talked about them before. Stephen Valiquette's company. The data I have here is proprietary. There are some, you know, there are a handful of teams that in the NHL that subscribe to get this same data. 34 points of data for every shot. So, in a long story short, to me, this is the best measurement of shot quality there is. And I called it up because Connor Hellebuck is fifth in the league in terms of goals saved above average when you account for quality. But right next to him and right just barely beneath him is Jordan Binnington. If I look down the list, Markstrom, Lehner, Rittich, Rask, hey, this is good radio. Binnington is the first Canadian goaltender that comes up. Those are obviously Helly being American and the rest of the guys being European. Hey, listen. To me, the interesting part of seeing the numbers is I think the narrative surrounding Jordan Binnington is that they're a really good, tight, stingy defensive team and that he benefits from that. And he is outperforming that environment, that defensive environment, significantly this year. Like I said, sixth best goals saved above average in the NHL, despite maybe his raw numbers being a little suppressed. Their expected save percentage in front of him is actually I think a lot lower than a lot of people would expect. And sorry, I'm just toggling across to that. It's you know, it's not in the top of the league. In other words, the actual math, the perception may be that they are this fantastic defensive team, but the reality is quite different. As a matter of fact, in terms of tough defensive environments, at least for Binnington among starters, the only guys that have it tougher, lower expected save percentage, Martin Jones, Braden Holtby, Sergei Bobrovsky, Henrik Lundqvist, and Carter Hart. So he's in the seventh toughest starting goalie environment behind the St. Louis Blues. I don't think a lot of people realize that, and he's outperforming it significantly. I'll give myself a back pat when he came up in January last year and started tearing it up, knowing the coaches that had been involved in that, both within the Blues and in the off season. Andy Kyoto in Toronto now works for the Penguins. David Alexander with the Blues. David Rogalski, the Blues development goalie coach. Like knowing, talking to them, knowing sort of the process that went into Jordan Binnington evolving to this, there were things in his game that were sustainable. And I still believe that. And I think maybe beyond the perception of just being sustainable, like he's excelling with them. This isn't just the product of a really good team. This is a guy who is playing above and beyond that. So it's a good argument, and when the numbers back up.
Yeah, Kevin, we got to talk to you about Jacob Markstrom as well. You know, you're based in Vancouver. You know, you cover the Canucks for NHL.com, and Markstrom's just having a fantastic year. You know, big reason why the Canucks are in playoff contention right now. They might even win the Pacific Division, right, because it's completely wide open. And, you know, I was watching the shot streak competition at last night's All-Star Skills competition, and, you know, he stopped Scheifele, he was stopping Perron. He ended up stopping five shots in a row, Kane, O'Reilly, Seguin, MacKinnon, and then Eric Staal. I made sure that I made a note of that because goalies typically say that they hate the shot streak competition, but Markstrom looked really good. And obviously, you know, Drew mentioned Binnington won the event and Vasilevsky was second, but I thought Markstrom, you know, after those two goalies was probably the most impressive goalie in that competition. But my question for you though is he's a pending UFA, and we know that Thatcher Demko was obviously a really good young goaltender, but how are you expecting this to play out? Because, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, Markstrom has just given the Canucks such good goaltending over the years.
Would you believe the best goaltending in the NHL? That's how good it's been, guys. And I hate to keep, like, not to just, like, rely on, I'll be honest with you, I love the fact I have a password to ClearSight Analytics, and I'm not trying to just rely on them. But
yeah, Kevin, what's that password?
Can I just say, everybody listen, here's the ... the reason I keep bringing it up is I do think that, you know, we've seen it with the raw data and the publicly available stuff has added context based on shot location and shot type and certain elements. And this is what we've wanted as goaltenders for so long, context to save percentage. Because we know, as a goaltender, you know, like, chances are not created equal. And even chances from the same spot on the ice, like, if you're coming at me as a goaltender, if you come at me in a straight line, the closer you get, the less net I'm giving up. Like, that's just that's simple geometry, right? I'm actually taking up more than that net the closer you get. Now, make me move across my crease and take a shot from that same spot from where all of a sudden that proximity to the net is less time for me to get across, set, and react. And it's a different story, right? So, like, we've always known as goaltenders, and goaltenders have always talked about the need for context. And I bring up ClearSight, A, because I have access, but B, because they add the most context of anything I've ever seen. And so Jacob Markstrom is a guy who, when I saw a lot of mid-season polls, including NHL.com, which, caveat, I don't get a vote for because I'm not staff there, Markstrom didn't even get a single top five vote in the NHL.com mid-season Vezina Award voting. I think he got some from the Professional Hockey Writers Association, but not near enough to get in the top three. When you adjust his numbers for shot quality, and the Canucks are a much better team, but not necessarily defensively, they're a bottom 10 team defensively in terms of expected save percentage. Jacob has saved the Canucks 14.32 goals this season. The only guy, other guy in double digits, is another guy who I think gets a little overlooked, Robin Lehner with the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, guys like Darcy Kemper are having great seasons, but he's saved the Arizona Coyote, and he's a guy that's a front runner in a lot of those lists. But his environment's better. He saved the Coyotes six goals. So Markstrom's outperformed him by more than double, and this makes for a fascinating discussion in Vancouver, because if you watch him here and you know how they defend or at times don't defend, you know how important he is. Much like I'm sure Jets fans feel about Connor Hellebuyck, who's deservedly in that Vezina conversation. He's fifth at 9.39 goals saved. And so locally, you know the value of this guy. The Canucks know the value. He's their MVP at a time when we're talking about Pettersson and Hughes at the All-Star game and Brock Besser and, you know, this great, you know, infusion of young talent that has the fan base here excited. None of that matters in terms of wins and losses without Jacob Markstrom and him performing so well this season. And I should add, amid a pretty tough emotional personal season with the loss of his father, two separate trips back home to Sweden, first to see him for one last time and then for a funeral. This has not been an easy year. And he has just, he has had, sorry guys, there's the alarm that's supposed to wake me up for my hockey. the season he's had is, it really is like top of the league. And yet, if you're the Canucks and you know that you need this guy, right? Like he is, and like the Jets with Hellebuck a couple of years ago, once you have that guy, you don't want to lose that guy, right? You know how, because everybody says you can find goaltending anywhere, and the UFA crop is incredible this summer. Like, it's one of the deepest ones we've ever seen. But you don't know how they're going to fit in your system. You know what you have in Jacob Markstrom, like the Jets did with Hellebuck a couple of years ago. So you're more likely to pay him. And yet, at the same time, everything I just talked about in terms of Jacob not getting Vezina votes in these polls, the perception... outside of your question, the perception, I think, around the league doesn't match the true impact that he's had here. And really, if you negotiate a contract before July 1st, you're kind of negotiating against yourself, because once it hits the open market, I believe that perception matters, because I believe it's shared amongst some NHL general managers. A goalie who three summers ago wouldn't have been claimed. I have very good information that he wouldn't have been claimed if they'd exposed him in the waiver draft. A year before that, he went through waivers and went to the American Hockey League. So I know a lot of goalie coaches that can see the evolution of Jacob Markstrom under goalie coach Ian Clark, believe in it and believe in him, like think he's legit. I don't know many of them were willing to put their job on their line by telling their general manager, this is a guy we should sign to a long-term big ticket, especially a year after a long-term big ticket for Sergei Bobrovsky appears to be backfiring at least somewhat in Florida. So I'm fascinated to see where it goes. His value here to Vancouver is incredibly high. So do you just pay him for a team that's going to have some cap issues in the next couple of years with Pettersson and Hughes coming up at the same time, not this after this season, but after the next? Or do you play a little hardball knowing that this is a buyer's market on July 1st and risk the chance of losing him just because you know you can't overpay at a time when it seems overpaying goaltenders is not a wise idea? I don't know which way it goes. I do not envy Jim Benning and Chris Gear, the assistant GM that does contracts for the Canucks, because it's a tough one. He is incredibly valuable to this team, and yet my hunch is the perception on the open market won't match up.
Kevin Woodley is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Kevin is with In Goal Magazine. We're talking about goaltending in and around the NHL.
And Kevin, if we're going to talk about goaltending, got to talk about what's going on with Eric Comrie. I mean, that might be the strangest story of the 2019-20 season. The fifth-year pro, three different teams, claimed back by the Jets from the Red Wings. And I can tell you, from an organizational perspective, when he was sent down to the Moose and cleared waivers, you know, it was like the Monty Python. There was much rejoicing because he was that important. I mean, he was the team MVP. I know you talked to him over the summer at that golf tournament, but from an organization's perspective, having a goaltender, now having, you know, someone who you can recall up if case in need be, how important is that? Because not only from an organization's perspective, but also to not put too much pressure on second-year pro Mikael Burden, because I know Mikael Burden obviously played 50 pro games. The organization was very happy for him to do that last year, but he's already played 35 this year. He's starting to look burnt out. So is there a perception, and is it changing, that goaltenders still need some time to develop, or is that still an accurate one to give these guys the proper time, not to keep the pressure on them, not expect him to be an NHL goalie in only his second year?
Well, I think it is changing a little bit, but at the end of the day, it's kind of like my golden rule of goaltending, and this is why I love the position. This is why everything I love about the position. There are no absolutes, right? There are no hard and fast rules to define every single goaltender, and some do take a little longer. Sometimes it's opportunity. Sometimes, like I talked about Binnington earlier, right? Like, yeah, it was time and experience and all those things, but also there was an evolution in his game, technically, that came from being introduced to a coach, you know, 3 or 4 years in that he hadn't been to before. Like, you know, we see these guys bounce around sometimes and they discover different voices. And you know, so the year that Combs has had, those are some of the toughest. And that's not just talking to him, it's actually talking to other goalies who have been through those. Because you bounce from organization to organization, and all of a sudden you've got all these different guys who have ideas about, you know, what your game might need. And so you can find yourself, even if you might not agree with all of them. I haven't spoken to him about this. This is just more general. So this is not Eric Comrie telling me these things. This is like guys I've talked to over the years that go through this. The challenge is, like, you can lose your foundation because everybody else has a different idea. And sometimes I know other goalies that have been like, man, like there was one guy that he wanted me to play with, like, I'm not a real skating goalie. He wanted me to play with a bunch of backwards flow, like get way out of my crease and chatting. He was kind of old school. And so I'm sitting there going, this isn't going to work for me. I'll try it, tried it, didn't feel comfortable, wasn't feeling good about my game. This isn't going to work for me. I need to play it my way and my strength. But you don't want to piss that guy off because he decides who starts. He's got the ear in the coach. You know, so years like that can be really tough. And sometimes, though, bouncing around, you can find a voice that changes everything for you. So there's a reason not everybody, you know, is ready for the NHL at the same time. And yet, increasingly, I do think we're seeing examples, you know, of the Carter Hart, of the, you know, Andrei Vasilevsky, and even Hellebuck, right? There were maybe some hiccups as the development path, you know, happened. We talked about the glove and the post play, and man, his game is tight right now. Like, I even talked about it after the Vezina final. Like, I was worried, you know, if they became a team that gave up more lateral chances, what would happen to his numbers? Because they were really good at not giving those up the year he was a finalist. And he's made those improvements in his lateral game. Like, it's... So not everybody gets there at the same time, but increasingly, I do think we're seeing Shesterkin in New York, Samsonov with the Capitals, Sorokin's going to come over with the Islanders and them clearing a path there. You know, the understanding that, much like players, maybe not 18, 19, but in special cases, 2021 might be okay, and for sure, you know, 23, 20, like, it's like you don't need to wait till these guys have been pros for like 8-9 years to give them a shot. And so, which just further clouds the market this summer with all these names that are about to hit it, because some of these kids are going to push some of these other guys out of jobs. And so if you're a goalie on that list of unrestricted free agents, that game of musical chairs becomes a little tedious. If you wait too long, you can find yourself without a seat. So I do think that is a trend that we're seeing in the NHL. It's not an absolute, but goalies getting shots at younger ages, for sure. And also teams taking advantage. You know, you talk about having three. We're seeing a trend where teams take advantage of having guys that don't need to clear waivers. The Panthers this year had Montembeau. It didn't work out. They could send him down and get him back to playing some games. It was no point in having him rot on the bench behind Bob. And Driedger had earned his time. There are examples like Saros in years past. Jonas Korpisalo, when Bobrovsky was in Columbus, where you have a guy that you think is ready for the backup job. You want him to be that day-to-day backup, but you also don't want him to rot on the bench. So you use the fact he doesn't require waivers, and you bounce him back and forth to the minors on a weekend. You call up your third guy to basically sit on the bench for you for the weekend in the NHL so that your young prospect who's ready for the job can still go get some minutes in the American Hockey League. That's the other trend I'm seeing.
Kevin Woodley is with In Goal Magazine. You can also read his work covering the Vancouver Canucks for NHL.com. Kevin, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Good luck in the tournament today, and then even better luck in the post-game festivities afterwards.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stretching, probably a lot of sleeping, perhaps some consumption. I'm a little nervous. I managed to qualify for the All-Star game on Sunday, guys, so that's against all the alumni at once. I hope I didn't write anything mean or nasty about any of them over the years, because this is their chance to get back at me.
Good luck with that, Kevin. Assuming you survive it, we'll have you on again real soon.
Thanks, guys.
Take
Always
care.
Enjoy it.
Thanks, Kevin. When we come back, we talk about the PHWA midseason award winners. We have Lou Korak joining us from St. Louis coming up at the top of hour number three. And your calls starting at 11:15 this morning. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Everyone wants to know why we're going. Goalies, right? No, this is all about the one big save, and enjoying the atmosphere, and just being here is an honor in itself. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to turn the brain off, and I'm going to put my mind on hold. I like where my game's at, and I want to continue getting better, and I want to continue with the energy that I've been playing with. So I'm going to take a moment, relax, and build up some energy and really force it.
Winnipeg Jets goaltender Connor Hellebuyck. Live on scene in St. Louis, his first All-Star game appearance for the Jets. Second All-Star game appearance. Thank you, Dave. Misspoke on that one. Talking about how he's going to turn his brain off to participate in the All-Star game, which is odd, but
know, whatever works for him.
Isn't that what we do every Saturday between 9 a.m. and noon?
Whatever works for Connor Hellebuyck. His game has certainly been at the top of NHL goaltenders this season, and that's why he was elected as the Vezina Trophy winner at the midseason mark based on the Professional Hockey Writers Association midseason balloting. Any argument with Connor Hellebuyck, you know, winning the trophy or being, I guess,
midseason?
Winning the midseason trophy?
Nope.
Ben Bishop finished second. Darcy Kemper finished third. Do you think Hellebuyck will end up being the Vezina Trophy winner at season's end?
It's really tough to say, but I think absolutely he has a really good shot at the very least to be a finalist, right? So obviously they don't give out the awards after 52 or 54 games, right? Which is where we're at now. But anybody who's watched this Jets team, and we've watched every game this year, I mean, Hellebuyck is really the only reason why the Jets are in a playoff race right now, right? Like, November was maybe the best month that we've ever seen from Hellebuyck. And that includes 2 years ago when he was a Vezina Trophy finalist, right? So, yeah, absolutely. I think he can be a Vezina finalist. Whether he ends up winning it, I mean, it's going to depend on a lot on what happens over the next, like, 30 games or so. But if we're basing it on the season up to this point, I absolutely think you give the Vezina to Hellebuyck.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair assessment, Ezzy. I mean, not only that, I think he's starting to charge into that most valuable player because where we've talked about it for the entire program, where would this Jets team be without Connor Hellebuyck? And I know traditionally goaltenders don't win MVP.
Yeah.
But, I mean, are you going to tell me that this team, if they make the playoffs, won't owe it largely to Connor Hellebuyck?
Like, just look at recently, Dave, the shutout versus Vancouver, right? Like, that was the last Jets win. And then go back to that home game on Sunday against Nashville. Like, the Jets would not have been in that game. They ended up losing that game.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have been in that game. Remember how good Hellebuyck was in that first period?
Mm-hmm.
I forget how many saves he made, like 11 or 12 or something like that.
The Jets were asleep until really the second period of that game. He was the only reason the Jets were only down 1-0 after 20 minutes. It was great save after great save, to your point there.
Right, and he's done that time and time again. Has his play slipped a little bit over the last 10 or 15 games? Yes, but based on his numbers, we talk about that goal saved above expectation, which tells you a lot more than just traditional save percentage.
Right.
If you look at that number alone, that shows you that if he's not the best goalie, he's at the very least a top three goalie.
If the Jets continue to slide, though, and if they slide out of the playoff spot, you can't help but wonder if it's going to go what happened to John Gibson last year in Anaheim.
Yep.
Remember, he was otherworldly, you know, for the majority of the year, and then eventually it just caught up to the to the Anaheim Ducks, and he, you know, fell by the wayside a little bit.
I would suspect if the Jets don't make the playoffs, it would it'll be because of Connor Hellebuyck, and I'm not putting it on him. I'm simply saying that just means he's not playing out of his mind as he has already.
He might still be very good, but just not
he just
out
may
of
have
this
forgot,
world.
Well, the problem is he may have forgot to turn the brain back on.
Always and, forget about the turning the brain
gotta,
on and off.
You got to turn it back on. So if you don't turn it back on, that's a problem. So I think if they don't make the playoffs, similar to Gibson, then you could see him fall out of the running.
When we come back, we'll head out to St. Louis. Lou Korak covers the Blues for NHL.com. Talk to him about the eyes of the hockey world being on the Show Me State and the city of St. Louis. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number three coming up next on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Jets and Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. And remember, coming up in about 15 or so minutes, we're going to be taking your calls. We don't do it often, but get your calling dialing numbers ready, dialing fingers ready. We'll be taking your calls coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to St. Louis. The eyes of the hockey world are on St. Louis as the NHL All-Star Game is taking place there. And we're pleased to be joined by Lou Korak of NHL.com. Lou, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Lou. You know, last night it was the skills competition and Jordan Binnington added to his legend with a great performance, not letting any pucks past him. You know, just in terms of drama, you know, obviously last year the Stanley Cup, that's obviously more important, but for the hometown crowd last night, must have been pretty entertaining watching Jordan Binnington putting on that show.
Yeah, it was pretty good. And, you know, you never know how those skills things are going to go. I mean, the guys are just out there pretty much enjoying themselves. And, yeah, for him to put together a streak of 10 in a row, I didn't think that anyone was going to top Vasilevsky there once he got to nine. I mean, he was pretty impressive himself. But, you know, a little help from the iron on Leon Draisaitl's last attempt there got him over the hump. But actually, I thought it was pretty cool when Tomas Hertl decided to don the Justin Bieber mask and yeah. take a stab at him there. It was pretty creative and got the crowd really into it. And yeah, he's been a fan favorite here ever since he's burst onto the scene a little over a year ago, and doesn't seem to be letting up anytime soon.
I also liked Lou when Al McInnes dusted off the old Sherwood and showed that he can still slap that shot over 100 miles per hour. Obviously, there are four members of this Blues team who are at the All-Star game. In addition to Binnington, you've got Ryan O'Reilly, David Perron, and Alex Pietrangelo. I wanted to ask you about Perron. This is his first All-Star game appearance, and obviously he was a big part of the Blues Stanley Cup last year, and he's on pace for a career year this year. Is that the guy that you're watching tonight in the actual All-Star game, just a guy who's had a fantastic career and finally gets rewarded?
Yeah, I think so, and he's really thriving in the moment, if you want to call it that way. I mean, you know, when Tarasenko goes down, you know, you've got to wonder who's going to be the guy that kind of picks up that slack, and David's certainly been the guy that does that, and they needed it. I mean, let's be honest, you don't just replace 30 to 40 goals a year on a dime, and, you know, you're thinking at that moment, is it going to have to be a collective effort? You're probably thinking along those lines, but, you know, here's Perron already in his 20s as far as goal scoring is concerned, and, you know, he stepped into that role and done an admirable job of it, and, you know, coinciding with the All-Star game being here in St. Louis and being his first one, he's really soaking all this in and enjoying it with his family, and, you know, when they did the last men in voting, he was really hoping he was going to be the guy that represents the Central Division. And when it happened, you can tell how happy he was about it. And I think justly rewarded. You know, I know there's a lot of people out there that wanted to see Cale Makar here, and Cale Makar is going to be part of many All-Star games in the future. But, you know, you got to think, if you're David Perron, this was your one shot to do this. Not to say that he can't do it again, but when he's this close and has a chance to be among the best, I think he's really thriving in this and savoring every moment of it right now.
You know, Lou, we know the excitement in St. Louis. You can see it when you're watching the television. But how much excitement is there for Brady and Matthew Tkachuk? We saw these guys following their dad around. Keith, obviously a Winnipeg Jet, also a St. Louis Blue, when he was a player at All-Star games. But for them to be making their first All-Star appearances in St. Louis, what does that mean for the city, and what's that kind of reaction getting right now?
Oh, it's another great story, and both of them are just tickled to death, and I know Keith is too, and you know, their mom Chantel is as well, and you know, to have the entire family here, and you know, I know a lot of people out there from Brady's perspective would say, you know, would you rather be in the Bahamas right now, you know, soaking up some sun and getting some rays, or being at home? And he was going to come home anyway and be here as you know, to support his brother and some other friends that are in the game. But when you get a chance like this, you really can't pass it up. And, you know, I thought it was pretty cool with Matthew last night when he stepped onto the Shooting Stars platform up there. He, you know, removes his Calgary Flames jersey, and he's got his Yadier Molina Cardinals jersey on. You know, you'll never take the kid out of St. Louis. And both of those guys growing up here, you know, they're part of that, you know, group that really puts the St. Louis kids on the map of getting drafted in the NHL, and just kind of shows, you know, how important hockey has been around here for a lot of these kids and how it continues to grow. And they're two perfect examples of it moving forward here.
Lou Korak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lou covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Lou, it was a few years ago now that the St. Louis Rams moved to Los Angeles, and that obviously left a hole in St. Louis and left a hole in the sporting marketplace. You know, the Cardinals are the summer team, given how big baseball is there, and there's no NBA team in St. Louis. Have the Blues really taken over that void left by the Rams going to LA, and, you know, with the Stanley Cup last year and the All-Star game this year? Have they really captured that sort of winter sporting marketplace in St. Louis now?
Oh, winning the Stanley Cup certainly elevates the platform and certainly raises you know, the awareness of hockey in St. Louis from a fan perspective. But I'll be honest with you, even when the Rams were here, you know, the the Blues have always been, you know, top billing, and their fan support has never wavered. And you know, whenever there was the threat back in the 80s of them potentially moving to Saskatoon, I mean, there was a tremendous outcry in the city about potentially losing the hockey team, and you know, they were going to do everything in their power not to allow that to happen. And yeah, certainly winning the Stanley Cup, you know, is going to bring about more fans, no doubt about it. But you know, as far as the Blues and the Cardinals, they're right up there side by side, and they formed a great partnership together. And fans embrace both teams with open arms. And this is a pretty passionate hockey market here. And I think a lot of the stars that are here this week, you know, taking all this in and enjoying it. You know, even Gary Bettman said yesterday, just at the fanfare alone, they had over 30,000 tickets sold for this. I mean, it just speaks volumes for, you know, just the hockey community here. And the young kids that are that have really embraced this team since they have won it, and you know, maybe want to be that next St. Louis Blues hockey player or NHL player themselves. So it is a growing market, but it's always been a big market, in my opinion.
Lou, we're almost exactly a month away from the NHL trade deadline, and I imagine, you know, when you're doing your radio hits, you're going to get asked about this quite a bit. So I'm just going to, you know, come out and ask you about it. Like, the Blues are right now in first in the Western Conference, you know, 6 points ahead of Colorado in the Central Division. It looks like there's a really good chance that they're going to win the Central. At the very least, you know, they'll probably finish second in the Central. Do you see Doug Armstrong pulling off any major moves? You hear Chris Kreider's name out there. Do you expect one of those big moves, if you want to call that a big move, or do you expect just depth pieces maybe added by Armstrong?
No, I think he's definitely going to be looking, and but you know, as anybody goes here, the price is going to have to be right. And I think the Blues, if they're going to make a trade, I think they do have you know, strength on their hands as far as making a deal, because of a lot of the depth that they have utilized and how some of those guys have performed well when they've been called upon to do that. But in saying that, if there's no match there, they're perfectly content with the group that they have, and you know, unless something changes, and you know, by all means, it seems like it's trending in the direction that you know, at some point here, if not by the end of the season or by the playoffs, Vladimir Tarasenko is going to come back for him. So there's a perfectly good addition for you right there, and would be a welcomed addition on any team. But yeah, if there's an area that I think that they're probably going to be looking at, it would probably be to potentially add, like you had mentioned, somebody in a top six role, a guy that's you know, going to help your scoring out. And Chris Kreider, I think, you know, I've been a proponent of that. I think he'd be a perfect fit for his style of game and what he can bring to this hockey team. But again, it's going to depend on what the cost is going to be. And, you know, Doug Armstrong's not going to make any knee-jerk reaction moves here. But if there's something there to be made to improve this hockey team, I think they feel like they're good in goal. They feel like, you know, knock on wood, there haven't been really any glaring major injuries on their blue line. They love their blue line. You know, he'll be content if there's nothing there to be made. But if there's a chance to go out and get a guy like a Chris Kreider, or, you know, you can throw out a Tyler Toffoli who could possibly be in that mix, I don't think he's going to hesitate to pull the trigger if need be.
You know, Lou, when Jordan Binnington signed his two-year deal with the Blues, everyone saw that as an opportunity for the team to see what he's capable of and him to kind of prove what he's capable of. Well, we're seeing, again, another very strong season from Jordan Binnington. So do you see, when he's eligible to sign an extension, the team signing him to a long-term deal?
I think so, and I think that's what really this sort of a bridge deal is all about. This is kind of one of those, you know, last year was great. It put the franchise on a higher platform as far as the hockey world is concerned. Obviously, the first Stanley Cup in the franchise's history, and he was the guy that was able to help get that done. And but you know, he's still learning, he's still growing. I mean, let's put things in perspective here. He just completed his first full calendar year of playing in the National Hockey League. So there's going to be growing pains there, but I think this is an opportunity for him to sort of prove himself, and he can continue down the path that he's been going. They're certainly going to reward him down the line. I mean, I think there's still a lot of great hockey left in him, but goalie is one of those positions that could be tricky. I mean, a guy can burst onto the scene and just overwhelm everybody, but is the sustainability there? That's always a question of these guys. And if he can continue to play at the level that he is right now, he's going to be part of the long-term future for this franchise, no doubt about it.
Lou Korak covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, thanks so much for your time and insight this morning. Enjoy the rest of the All-Star weekend in St. Louis showing off your hometown team.
Okay, guys, take care. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Lou. Thanks again. All righty, we've been hyping it up all show long. It's now time to hear from you. Open phones. We don't do this often. Don't make us regret it. 204-780-1290. Let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets. Will they be a playoff team at the end of the season? Who is to blame for the Jets' recent struggles? Have the Jets mishandled the Dustin Byfuglien situation by not feeling the whole of his absence? We want to talk to you. We want to hear from you about the Winnipeg Jets. 204-780-1290. Open phones from now until 12 noon. Let's do this. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes after the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Open phones from now until 12 noon. 204-780-1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated, has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. Let's head to the phone lines. Who we got first, Sean?
Let's go to Gregory.
Gregory, good morning and welcome to the program. How are you?
Hi, Drew. How are you?
I'm well, Greg.
Is Izzy there?
Izzy is here, too.
Well, I'm here, Greg. What's up?
Izzy's here. Dave's here. Sean's here. I'm here. It's a whole menagerie.
Everybody except Remus. If Remus is listening, hi to him, too.
Yes, of course. Hi to Remus. What's on your mind, Greg?
I am one of the lone black sports fans that calls into your show here, and you know where I'm going to go here. Diversity in hockey, especially with the Hakeem Talu situation and the situation that just happened like 2 weeks ago between the Bakersfield Condors and the Ontario, California Reign situation. I think that the AHL is starting to lose me as a fan in regards to how they're handling both situations, and I'll tell you why. The situation in Rockford happened under Dave Andrews' watch, and I think that in my view, in my opinion, Dave Andrews needs to start investigating that situation that happened in Rockford, and deal a very more punishment in regards to the situation that happened between Condors and the Reign. 5-game suspension is not going to be a deterrent in regards to racial epithets on the ice or off the ice with hockey player to a coach or vice versa. In my regard, that suspension that the AHL just leveled should have been at least three times the amount. At least three times, or maybe four times, and four times is especially that we have very prominent superstar players who are from a racially descent, such as PK Subban, Wayne Simmonds, who experienced racism in a preseason game, and I think that hockey has basically, in my view, failed to step up and recognize and deal very harsh punishment in regards to that nature, especially the thing that happened with the Colorado Eagles, who was at the time the ECHL affiliate for the Winnipeg Jets.
Greg, I appreciate the call and I appreciate your vantage point on that. I mean, you're alluding to Brandon Manning of the Bakersfield Condors, who shamefully made a racist remark in an AHL game, and he was handed out with a 5-game suspension. And I don't disagree with you. I mean, I don't know that 5 games is sufficient in that manner. I mean, we're not going to solve racism on this show. We condemn it in all its fashions.
Well, if hockey is truly for everyone, then you have to ensure that it is.
I'm with Greg. I think five games
is light.
No, it absolutely is. And, you know, racism is completely unacceptable in hockey and in all walks of life, right? And so five games is probably not enough. And, you know, whether that's 15 games, 20 games, maybe even the rest of the season. And I realize that Manning has apologized for it, but I think if you really want to make a point, you probably suspend him for at least 15 or 20 games. So absolutely. I mean, we can't tolerate that. In this day and age, there's just no place for racism. You know, just period.
Make it a blanket policy around hockey. You know that if you leave the bench to join a fight, it's a 10-game suspension, no questions asked. If you have abuse of an official, it's a 10-game suspension, no matter asked. Do the same. Make it so you use a racial slur, you're gone for 15 games. And just
take any slur.
Just take the gray area out of it and don't make it. And then
you want to swear at someone, that's fine.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, you just can't
keep those reprehensible words out of it.
Yep.
Good call, Greg. I totally agree with your point of view there. Sean, who's up next?
We got D. Hooker up next, a guy who used to live beside Ezzy, so we have no idea what this call is going to be like.
All right.
D didn't live beside me when I used to live in a condo in Osborne Village. D was the level below us. So
Not close beside us. That sounds like it's close enough to living for Ezzy that you should get hazard pay for that, D. D, good morning. What's up, and thanks D? For joining us.
You got that right with hazard pay.
What's on your mind?
Well, I can tell you one thing. The new head coach of the Winnipeg Jets should be Eddie Olchuk.
Well, first of all, the Jets still have a head coach. So unless you're breaking news on the program, D, I think I get your point.
Down the road.
Down the road. You're Eddie Olchuk, who was a head coach briefly a number of years ago and was not a very good head coach, but, you know, maybe time has you know, changed his philosophies as it pertains to being behind the bench. But I guess what you're alluding to, D, is that you think that Paul Maurice's time here in Winnipeg, does not have a contract after the season. You think his time is going to come to an end here in Winnipeg?
You hit the nail right on the head, my friend. And the other thing is that when we lose all the defensemen that we've lost, and there's no idea when Buff is coming back, we have nobody to help out our goaltenders.
It's very true. The goaltenders, I mean, that's why we've been talking a lot today about Connor Hellebuyck, about how otherworldly his performance was in November when he really backstopped the Jets to that great record based on his incredible performance. But as we've found out and as we know over the years, goaltending tends to regress to the mean at some point in time. And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck can only do so much when the defense in front of him is struggling.
Yeah, the other thing is, too, is I think that now, after the All-Star weekend here, I think the next 9 games are going to make or break the Jets' season. And if they don't make the playoffs, we are going to have a fire sale of players here in Winnipeg.
Time will tell, D. Appreciate the call and my sympathies for having had to live so close to Ezzy for that many years.
Good hearing from you, D.
All good for hearing from you. And Ezra, don't take nonsense from these other guys.
Oh, I never do. I never do.
Good stuff. Take care, brother.
Yep. Take care, D.
Good talking to you.
Thanks for the call. Sean, who do we have up next?
Let's go to Ken.
Ken joins us on the line. Ken, good morning, and thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning, boys.
What's on your mind, Ken?
I'm hearing stuff that I've heard a while back on Bufflin. Somebody had mentioned to me, who was pretty close in the administration with True North, that when the season was up last year, Buff was pretty badly beat up, obviously from coming back from an injury a little bit too soon. And he made the comment to Chevy that he was done. He didn't want to play anymore. He's ready to retire at that point, but he wasn't really sure what to do about it. And Chevy did the whole, well, you know, just sign these papers, we're done for the year. Think about it over the summer, we'll talk about it in the fall. I think Buff's mind was made up last year. I don't think he's going to change his mind now at this point. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that needs the money, truthfully. He doesn't seem to be one of these kind of flashy kind of guys. It's all about the cash. So I don't think he's coming back. And you know, I appreciate the time he spent with us, but we got to seem to move on. We're stuck on this whole, he's going to come back and save the world, and it's just not going to happen. We had a really good November because we played a very, very weak schedule back then. So we looked great back at that point, and people are thinking that's what we're going to have this year. It's not going to happen. So you got to just start building forward. And Chevy made a mistake trying to push all his chips in on that one pile, and it didn't work out. GMs make mistakes. So you just pick it up and move on. It's not Maurice. And truthfully, to a certain extent, Chevy Gamble didn't work out. not really on him. He makes 100 decisions a year, and that's just one bad one he made. So, well, that's a high-profile decision, but that's unfortunate. But I just think people need to just move on at this point.
Ken, I appreciate the call. We all appreciate the call. 204-780-1290. We'll never know, truthfully, what happened between Kevin Cheveldayoff and Dustin Byfuglien. We'll never know
Maybe Dustin Byfuglien will write a tell-all book. I don't know.
That I know. That I know is he's not going to write a tell-all book. But, you know, whatever the truth, wherever the truth may lie, obviously this came as a blow to the Winnipeg Jets. And there's certainly an argument to be made that, and I've made it, I think I've tried to make it on the show today, that Kevin Cheveldayoff maybe did not handle it as well as he could, particularly as the season has gone on this year, Dave.
The biggest question mark for me for this whole situation is what went on in the summer. What were the questions being asked when Dustin Byfuglien didn't participate in the Beauty League?
Mm-hmm.
Were the Jets aware?
Was that a flag?
Like, obviously they were aware because they saw his name wouldn't have been mentioned, but at that point,
did
was
that
Kevin Cheveldayoff? Yeah, exactly.
Did and also, Dave, sorry to cut you off, also, what happened between the Beauty League and the start
exactly
of training camp,
yeah.
Right? Like, so, I mean, we don't know, right? And, you know, all of these questions, there are still no answers, right? Like, it's like 4 months later since October, and we still don't have any answers to these questions, right? But I agree with you. Like, if you had Buff in the lineup, we have no idea how many more, like, how many, that doesn't necessarily translate into 10 more wins,
right?
But you got to think the Jets would probably have at least, you know, I don't know, 5 to 7 more points just with having Buff in the lineup.
I
just the offense that he provides and the fact that he's able to play.
He's a difference maker.
Absolutely. So it's thrown a wrench into the Jets' plans for sure.
There's no question about that. Okay, let's head to break. 204-780-1290. Phone lines are open. We still want to talk to you about the Winnipeg Jets, about anything else in the NHL, the world of hockey that you have on your mind. Are the Jets going to be a playoff team at season's end? Who's to blame for the recent struggles? Should the Jets be active on the trade market leading up to the trade deadline? All these topics, we want to hear from you. 204-780-1290. More calls to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Continuing on, hour number 3 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight's early show already sold out. Very few tickets available for the late show. Get them now. rumorscomedyclub.com. And all next week, or pardon me, starting Thursday next week, Darren Rose, you know him from Match Game on television. Great list of performers coming up. Check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Sean, let's head back to the phone lines, 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you. Who's up next, Sean?
Let's go to Dave.
Dave, good morning and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks for calling in. Dave, what's on your mind?
Well, number one, I'm going to put the Buff thing to rest. I'm a huge fisherman, and if you look from now till midsummer of 2020, Buff is entered in about 13 or 14 major fishing derbies. So that part can be put to rest. He ain't coming back. That's a done deal. I think what everybody's forgetting, we're getting a world-class forward back in probably 2 or 3 weeks in Brian Little. And that's going to help this team tremendously. And I know our defense is ragged. Pionk is everything I thought he was going to be. I'm probably the only guy that said when it happened, this guy's going to make everyone forget about Trouba. But anyways, that, thank God, has come to fruition. Thank goodness. But this ragtag defense, Hellebuck's going to stand up. We're going to get a world-class forward back. Life's going to be good. It's not going to be so bad like everyone, all the doomsayers are saying. That's all I got.
I like your optimism. Yeah. Appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I want to enter those fishing tournaments.
Well, I think, you know,
you do like to fish, Dave.
I'm the only person that's caught a 24.5-inch walleye, so I think I should
Excuse me, Mujumbo. First of all, I've got a...
Hang on, Mujumbo?
Yeah, that's right. I've got at least a master angler in Ontario, so it's, I think, 26 inches in
Okay,
Ontario.
Bob Azumi. I mean, we can both agree that we're pretty good fishermen.
I was actually more of a Wayne Azumi fan, for the record.
I have no idea what either of you are talking about.
Saturday morning fishing show.
Just come fishing with us, Drew. We'll show you how to, you know, reel a couple in.
You know, but very well I don't speak to you after 12 o'clock on Saturdays.
You know, to Dave's point, I mean, he makes a really good point.
My point or the other Dave?
Our caller Dave, you know, about Brian Little.
We got to have mercy on your point.
Right. And, you know, he mentions, you know, hopefully Little's back in 2 or 3 weeks. We really don't know. I mean, he suffered a couple of really serious injuries, right? The concussion in the preseason, then he takes the puck to the face in that game against the Devils in November. So, you know, hopefully Little's back in, you know, early to mid-February, but you know it might not happen until late to early March, right? So yes, I agree that Brian Little nicely slots in as your third line center, and then Lowry's maybe your fourth line center, right? Or maybe you have Little on the wing or something like that. You have options because Andrew Kopp can play center as well, but I think he makes a good point. I mean, it's not over here, guys. The Jets are only 3 points out of a playoff spot, but they've been steadily slipping. So even though I'm
let me ask you this though, I
was just going to say though quickly, okay. Drew. I mean, I'm like Dave. You know, I'm a half glass half full type of guy.
Not if it's beer.
The Jets have lost four. That's funny. The Jets have lost four games in a row right now. So you can't come out of the break and lose another couple of games. It starts with the game on the 31st against Boston. You know, you've got to beat St. Louis. So the Jets just don't have that much room for error.
They certainly don't. 204-780-1290. We want to hear from you. Give us a shout. Let us know your thoughts about the Winnipeg Jets. If you think they're going to be a playoff team, if you think they can turn this thing around, or if you think that it's time maybe for a bit of an overhaul of the roster. But Dave the caller, not Dave the analyst or the fisherman, whatever you are, Dave, fisher sure. person, mm-hmm. You know, talks about the return of Brian Little. And let's say he comes back in 2 weeks. We don't know. But mm-hmm. let's take on that optimistic point of view and say he comes back in 2 weeks. Does his return will obviously help, but does it solve all the problems when they seem to start on the back end more than they do with the forward group up front?
Well, I mean, I think defensively you're going to get an improvement with Brian Little, especially in your third line center role, right? I think you're going to have a guy who is definitely going to be able to help you and help this forward group play a better defensive game. So I think, you know, this is a very, like, to the caller's point, and I always agree with people named Dave, I think he makes a valid one. I think if Brian Little comes back, the problem is that he can be a bit of a difference maker. Now, I'm not saying a complete difference maker because we're dealing with a largely, you know, defense that's made up of guys who are at best third pairings or, you know, 7-8 guys. So it's a bit, you know, when we had Murad on last week with Ezzy and I, we talked about that idea of having guys who are basically playing a rung or two above what they really should be doing. Sure. And it's admirable, and obviously, if you're given that opportunity, you have to take it. But it's not obviously ideal. Now, Adam Lowry, of course, he's been out five. It was 5 days ago we learned that he was going to be out at least a month.
Right.
Now, look, when team says at least a month, we don't know what that means. Andrew Kopp was supposed to be gone for, I believe, at least a month as well. He came back about 7 to 9 days early, I think. So coaches give themselves that wiggle room. They say at least a month, the minimum. That way you say, look, if it's a little bit over, well, that's fine. If it's a little bit under, it's not the end of the world. All I'm saying is it seems like that Adam Lowry and potentially Brian Little, those guys aren't coming back till trade deadline when you kind of have to have an idea as to what your team, I'm saying if they're coming back, I mean, not the Little specifically, not Lowry, but that's when you're kind of already wanting to know what your team is going to be, because to Ezzy's point earlier, you can't afford to be a middling team for the next 10 games until the end of, when's the deadline? February 25th, I think.
Yeah.
So you can't.
A month from today.
That's right. So you can't be a middling team until that point and then say, well, look, we've got two guys coming back. Maybe we can turn it on, because at that point, it may be too late. Now, having said that, and I don't want to speak up both sides of my face, but the reality is the Western Conference hasn't been very good and teams have failed to rise. Like even St. Louis, remember we talked about St. Louis being way ahead and Colorado not catching them. Well, then Colorado hit a bit of a slide. And now Colorado's won, I think, three in a row, but then Dallas has hit a bit of a slide. So you've got these teams that are kind of failing to take advantage of other teams'
Nobody is
misfortune.
Separate. Everybody's going through these slumps. The wheat is not separating from the chaff at any
Correct.
Point
that's
in time.
What I'm saying.
Shawnee, who do we have?
We got Rody on the line.
Oh, here we go. The Dutch Jets fan. Rody, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you guys so much for having me on again. How are you guys doing today?
We're well.
Awesome.
Where are you, though? I mean, we know when you first started to call into us, you were in the Netherlands, and then you were in Vancouver for a while. So where in the world is Rowdy San Diego?
No, I was studying in Kamloops for one semester, starting January till April last year. So now I'm just back home in the Netherlands, and everything is going fine here.
Well, we're glad to hear that. So what, from the European point of view, what do you see overseas in the Netherlands about the Winnipeg Jets as of late?
Well, I've mentioned this before that I'm a big fan of, you know, the analytics stuff. I'm a big fan of Sean Tierney, who we just had on today. And it's just you're rooting against the numbers that are going against the Jets. I mean, this team to only generate the worst amount of quality shots in the NHL, it's a bit tough to see. And honestly, I love Paul Maurice. I think he's a wonderful human being and a great coach. But I feel like it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to separate, to go on separate ways this summer, to, you know, install a coach who's able to play a bit of more of an offensive-style system, maybe use the talents on his team a bit more, especially now you get a more mobile defense rather than a physical defense that you had before. I think Paul Maurice would be a great fit in a team like Seattle that maybe won't be able to draft as much skill in a couple of years, and he's been linked to that team. And I feel like it's time for a coach who's not afraid to use the offensive talent that is on his team and isn't afraid to take more risks.
Rowdy, always appreciate the call. Always good to hear from you. Glad you're doing well back home in the Netherlands. And next time you're in Winnipeg, be sure to give us to come by and visit and say hello, of course. He's gone. Okay, Rowdy's gone. But yeah, to Rowdy's point about
thanks for calling,
about,
Rowdy.
About yeah, Paul Maurice. Call. Yeah, and you know, I am put me in the camp of people that don't think Paul Maurice is going to be fired. It's just too late in the season, guys. If you were going to make it,
what about giving an extension though?
Well, I mean, you hear that, you know, it's possible, but just let me first address, you know, Maurice this year, right? Because, you know, going into the season, the expectations were definitely lower, Dave. We've talked about this quite a bit, right? A couple of years ago, the Jets go to the Western Conference Finals, and then a lot of people the next season, 2018-19, are picking the Jets to be a Stanley Cup contender. If not, you know, the Stanley Cup champion this year, it's much different with the turnover on defense. So I think with all of the changes on defense, you know, the Dustin Byfuglien situation, all the injuries, I think Maurice has done a pretty good job to keep the Jets in the playoff race at this point. But, you know, if the season ends and the Jets aren't in the playoffs, you wonder, you know, if they look at the coaching situation and they say, you know, we want someone else to right this ship, right? Because, you know, there's no guarantee the Jets are going to be a playoff team next year. I mean, we know that there's going to be an infusion of young talent, you know, on defense and up front, right? Like the Ville Heinolas.
Maurice, a coach that doesn't really love young talent, I mean, at the same time.
I think a couple of years ago, you would have said it's ridiculous if you're talking about, you know, Paul Maurice losing his job or the Jets going in a different direction. But I think now it's not so crazy and you might see a coaching change. But again, you know, this is all speculation at this point. So when you talk about a contract extension and all that, yeah, it could happen. But, you know, maybe the Jets do decide to go another way.
The only thing I would qualify it is Darren Dreger was on the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick this week. And when asked about Maurice and whether there's a hot seat, he specified that he was 100% safe. And then he said, he does, this is the quote, but what I do know is that Paul Maurice, as head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, still has the support of his general manager, and just as importantly, has the support of ownership.
Yeah, Peter Laviolette was 100% safe until 48 hours later, and he wasn't safe anymore.
Sure, but what I would suspect is that this is coming from...
Yes, I hear what you're saying.
The GM, so...
Sean, who's up next?
Let's go to Rob.
Rob, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Well, I don't call in very often. It's probably the second time total, and I just do a lot of listening and before I have a comment. You know what? Petey Laviolette lost his job because Nashville's been open for so long to win a cup, and they couldn't pull it off. I mean, Maurice isn't even in that boat. We're talking about a defense that completely stripped on the right-hand side, and then you got Byfuglien, you know, playing this little role where he's not going to play. Am I playing? Am I, what's going on, right? So now you're stunned with Maurice with a whole bunch of young guys. No chemistry on the back end whatsoever. It's completely changed. You got Kulikov playing in a role. He should be more of a depth player than a, you know, a first, second liner. I mean, you can't expect much, guys. I mean, everybody knows that the Jets are going to be bad this year. And if I'm the only one that thought that, then this place is crazy.
Those two things aren't mutually exclusive. You know, you could have thought that, and this place could be crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've watched almost every single Jets game. And since they got back, I was a season ticket holder for a while. It was great, but a little expensive after, you know, 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't think Maurice is going to lose a job. I don't think it's on him. he got stripped of his right-hand side, and if they knew Bufflin wasn't coming back right now, do you think they wouldn't be making a change and trying to maybe move as a Roslovic or a Perreault or something like that, and maybe a picker to get, you know, probably a top pair defenseman, you know, something that can work. And that way Maurice has a fighting chance. But right now he's got no fighting chance. And I don't blame the Jets on this situation at all. Or do I blame Chevy? There's nothing you can do. You saw Sherratt take off to Montreal and say, oh, this is a great, you know, who wouldn't want to play here? So he was offered an extra year. He said no to it. He went to Montreal. And then you couldn't afford Myers because you thought you had Bufflin. You guys he's handcuffed. He really is.
Rob, appreciate the call. We appreciate the insight. Thanks for joining us this morning. Shalani, let's head to break. If you're on the line, hold on tight. We'll get to you on the other side of the commercial. One more segment to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Phone lines are open 204-780-1290. We'll try and get everyone on air before we're up at the top of the hour. Call now or forever, hold your peace, or I guess just tweet it to us. You can do that too.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's go back to the phone lines. Shawnee, who do we have up next?
We got Bill patiently waiting.
Bill, patiently waiting. Thank you for doing so. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, my friends. How are you?
Very well. What's on your mind, Bill?
Well, you know, I've been listening to your show. I listen to your show all the time, and today I'm listening again. You got more than half the people turning around saying, well, it's time to get rid of the coach and get a new coach. You know, Maurice is doing the best he can with what he's got. I mean, when you go in there, your offense is obviously still playing to the best of their ability. I mean, they are getting tired because they're going back and forth a lot more. But when you go from having one of the strongest defense in the league to now actually having one of the weakest defense in the league, I mean, if you guys watch the games like I do, every game through the whole game, the opposing team has somebody wide open in front of the net. It shouldn't be happening. I mean, we had the bigger guys like Buff and Myers that cleared the front of the net and Sherratt, but not anymore. There always seems to be somebody alone in front of that net, and that's where they're losing a lot of their goals from. They're getting scored on by that point from there. So as for Maurice doing his job, as far as I'm concerned, he's still doing a great job like he did when the first time he got there.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Thank you for your opinion there.
Yeah, and I can't disagree, right? Because, you know, when you look at where the Jets were at the end of November, early December, you're thinking, okay, this team is competing for second place in the Central, because at that point, St. Louis had already pulled away. But now I think the best you're going to do is get one of those wild card spots, right? Like Colorado has started to separate themselves. Maybe you catch Dallas, but really you're battling with Minnesota, Nashville, those Pacific teams.
You need to start winning games. Who cares about catching top three teams? You're not going to do anything until you start putting some wins together.
No, but all I'm saying is I think, you know, the expectations have changed a little bit in terms of how they performed in that month of November. But, you know, to Bill's point about the defense, we've talked about this, guys, you know, and other shows on the station have talked about this. They've talked about it on TSN TV. I mean, the Jets' defensive zone coverage and the group of defensemen the Jets have is just not cutting it, right? And so when you take Tucker Poolman out of the lineup and even Nathan Beaulieu out of the lineup, you're stretched thin, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nobody left in the AHL that's really going to save you. I mean, like a guy like Cam Schilling, you know, all due respect, I mean, his ceiling is a third pairing guy at the NHL level, right? Like, he's a really good defenseman, but like, he's not going to move the needle. No. So the Jets group of defensemen right now has to be better.
If they want to improve, that's why I think,
or you make a trade.
Well, that's why I think the spotlight and a lot more focus needs to be on the performance or lack thereof of Kevin Cheveldayoff. At some point in time, you know, you try to do the patchwork thing with the Spezas and the Dahlstroms and the Betettos. Okay, and that's fine, and it worked for a little while. But at a point in time, you have to realize that it's not working anymore, and it's unlikely to start working again. So you have to decide, are you punting on the season and saying whatever shall be this year, or are you looking to improve your roster? And right now, it seems like he's going with the whatever shall be focus. And that's why the team is where it's at, because they're fielding a not NHL caliber defense for the most part, aside from aside from Pionk and Morrissey. Well, everybody else you would say are playing, as you guys talked about with Murat last week, they're playing above their heads or they're playing roles that they're not suited to play, and that's on the general manager to fix that or to not and just say we'll let the cards lie where they will.
But what's not on the general manager is Buff deciding that whole situation, deciding that he's not going to play, right? Like back in September, Chevy didn't know that he wasn't going to have Buff. And I agree with what you're saying, Drew. So why not make a move back then, right?
Like, No. I'm not saying make the move back then necessarily. You tried it out. You gave your patchwork defense a little bit of time and they performed for you. Not so much in October, but in November they performed for you. But it's also incumbent on the general manager to sort of take a step back and look not necessarily specifically at results, but to look at what the real results are. Not the wins and losses necessarily, but say, how is this team going to perform 6 weeks from now and 8 weeks from now and 10 weeks from now and 12 weeks from now? And everybody that looks at the numbers for the Winnipeg Jets, even when they were playing well, said it's not going to be able to perform to this level for the entirety of the season. That's on Kevin Cheveldayoff. That's it for this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to everybody who called in and joined us on the program today. Really appreciate your contributions. Big thank you to our guests. We were joined by Jason Bell. We were joined by Sean Tierney. We were joined by Kevin Woodley. And we were joined by Luke Korak. In case you missed any of the program, it's going to be available for download on tsn1290.ca. It's available on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.